So he is part of our team. And then on the left is Ms. Violet Kapashani, who is our monitoring and evaluation manager. And on her left is Naima, who is our area manager for the Western Cape, manages laboratories. So I think that is our team from the NHLS. A small team in one way, but a team that we've prepared to be able to answer any range of questions that might arise from the committee.
Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Edmund Pilliam, the DDG in the National Department of Stock.
No, thanks very much. Can we have guest introducing themselves as well?
Chair, my name is Len Deacon from Len Deacon and Associates. I attend the committee on a regular basis, and if I can just for the record note that we wish the chairperson a speedy recovery.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, House. My name is Kemi Oluwole. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. My name is Bob Governor from Mediclinic.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Tengo Tengela. I am the Nehao Parliamentary Office.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Dan Nayana. I'm here for the Medical Association of South Africa.
Morning, Chair. I'm Shelley McGee, also from the South African Medical Association.
Well, thanks very much. We've just been joined by one of the researchers, Umngcwabe, as well, who was not present when we were introducing the staff. Thanks very much. We'll go to apologies. As I've indicated, the chair is not well. That's the apology that I want to pass to the committee, and then ask the secretary to indicate whether she has other apologies that she has received.
Good morning, everyone. I received an apology from Ms. Ndaba. She's not coming due to a family emergency. Mr. Mapanga is attending public hearings with agriculture. Ms. Adams is not well. Ms. Kopane is not attending due to party commitment. And Mr. Imam Sheikh is attending Saturday meeting in Tanzania. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. So these are the apologies. We'll go to the next item, which will be presentation by NHLS on the annual report, the financial statements based on the audit outcome by the Auditor General. We'll give you time to present for about 30 minutes to an hour to 45 minutes just for your presentation, so that you at least work within the time limits. We'll then enter into discussion after that in relation to based on the presentation that we'll have made, but also based on the reports, because we've already table the report, we've gone through the report, it's now a public document. We'll hand over to you, Chair, to indicate who is taking us through it, whether yourself or the agency or whoever.
Thank you, Acting Chair. We wish the Chair of the Committee, Ms. Dundra, well, and we hope that any laboratory tests she requires for her health were done by the excellent services of the NHLS. If not, we would have to maybe, when we come next time, ask her to explain why not. That's just a joke. Acting Chairperson, I'd like to indicate at the outset that in some ways, the suspended CEO and CFO should really be here to answer some of the questions around their management. As you know, they are suspended. Their disciplinary cases will proceed later this month, is the next date for the set aside for the hearing. The chairperson of the internal audit manager, his disciplinary hearing is on the 17th of this month, and he is suspended. And the supply chain manager and the facilities manager both resigned when they were presented with their disciplinary charges in advance of the hearing. The matters, of course, are being handled not just by the board, but in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, have been reported to the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer and also to the South African Police Services, who are attending to the matters. But I am here as the chairperson of the board to present to you and to share with you our annual report, and as well as a number of measures taken by the board to deal with some of the issues that arise. So the first few slides are really introductory ones. You have copies of them in your handouts, and I think you know our vision and mission well. We presented this to the Portfolio Committee before, including when we presented our strategic plan. Our values are there, and we really see these as a commitment rather than just simply some nice words about what we do. As you know, we operate under our legislative mandates as a Section 3A public entity. The board as a whole is the accounting authority in the NHLS. Just to remind you that we have 288 laboratories across the country, and we serve about 80% of the people of our country, in particular the poor. We undertook 91 million laboratory tests during this financial year from a workforce of about 7,300. And I think what's important when you look at the NHLS is to recognize that the NHLS provides its services far cheaper than the private sector, in spite of the fact that we are providing services to people in poor, rural, and distant communities where the cost of running a laboratory and the transport costs of transporting specimens are much higher. So we have bigger overheads, we have responsibilities to the country for training future generations of pathologists and technologists, but we are still a whole lot cheaper than the private sector. When we look at our performance overview, what we try to do for you in these next few slides is to summarize our key achievements and some of the challenges that come out from across the different parts of the annual report and the audited financial statements. So we've taken the few hundred pages and tried to crystallize out these points for the purposes of the committee. So our customer satisfaction index has improved. We have a very low staff turnover of 0.3%. Our service delivery, as you'll see from the indicators, has improved, and we have been refurbishing up to a point some of our older laboratories, although we really do need to put more into capital investment. And you can see that our turnaround times have improved. And that is one of the most critical things, is when people, doctors and others, submit laboratory tests to support patient care, one of the most critical things you want is you want those results back quickly so that you can use them for the patient's benefit. And you can see from these examples that 96% of our tuberculosis microscopy tests are performed within 48 hours, 97% of our GXP tests in the same time frame, and our viral load tests, which has become so critical to patient care in HIV or patients with HIV infections, to their wellness, we're doing 87% of those within 96 hours. Remember, this includes often transporting specimens from deep rural areas, and we still come in with those kind of performance statistics. You can see, get a sense from this slide of the volumes of tests that the NHLS is performing. CD4 tests, which are again critical in HIV care or diagnosis, for the not diagnosis but care for the purposes of treatment, we've done 3.382 million tests in one financial year only, and cryptococcus tests, antigen tests, 228,000, an associated infection, nearly 5 million HIV viral load tests, and half a million HIV PCR tests, and more than 2 million gene expert tuberculosis tests, the most modern way for diagnosing tuberculosis, and this has really pioneered great improvements in TB diagnosis and early treatment. Our number of medical registrars, the specialists that we are supporting their training, and medical scientist interns, it's more or less flat. We have about 250 in the year as opposed to 269. Those are normal fluctuations of when people finish and new people start. So we're steady on that. In terms of our training, you can see that our staff have published 618 articles in reputable journals in the year, and importantly, we have attracted an additional 275 million rand of research grant funding into the NHLS, over and above what we receive from payment for our services. And those grants allow us to do a whole lot of extra things that our funding would not otherwise allow. When we look at the program performance, what we would like to share with you here, and I'm just worried that the red may block the text there, but what we've tried to do for you to simplify the complexity of the presentation is those items where we have achieved the targets. We've highlighted those in green. Those where we sort of more or less in line with the targets, you know, a little bit here or there, we've put those in yellow. And then where the target hasn't been achieved, we've put that in red. In general, we have not explained why we've achieved things that have been achieved. So the greens, we tended not to give an explanation because we achieved it. But those that are red, where we haven't achieved our performance targets, we provided you with a brief explanation in the table. So if you have a look at it, you'll see that in terms of our overall administration and our general turnover and assets to liabilities and our payment of our creditors, you can see that we've achieved or been more or less flat in all of those. We still struggle with our cash flow coverage, and I think we've discussed that previously with you, that we are dependent on the provinces paying on time. So there are two main sources, if you like, of funding for the NHLS. The various conditional grants, or grants from through the national department, and those that come directly, we get 100% of the money on time, and we don't have to look in any other direction. The provinces also, the national department also provides a conditional grant to the provinces for services such as HIV and TB, and then the provinces also procure laboratory services from their equitable share. And from their tertiary services grant as well. And we are dependent on the provinces paying the NHLS in a timely fashion according to our invoices, billing them for the services they've procured. And there are times where there's a lag in payment, and as a result of that, we may not have as much cash in the bank as we would like to have for the purpose of running the NHLS. The audit opinion, I'm sorry to report to you, is a qualified audit this year, and I'll go into an explanation of the nature of it later in the presentation, in the last section of the presentation, when I share with you the financial situation and the auditor's report. But you can see that our improved efficiencies have helped us link our expenditure as a proportion of our turnover. Now, you can see that this slide on information and communication technology, there were six indicators, three of which we achieved and three of which we did not achieve. You won't be able to read it on the slide because the black text is lost in the red. But in your handouts, it should be clearly visible. So the first one is the percentage of registered users using our track care system. Now, this is the doctors in the hospitals in the provinces who can access their records electronically. So we moved from a situation where we print the report on a piece of paper, we deliver it to the hospital, things get lost, they take time to deliver, they go to the wrong ward and so on. Now doctors can access, with confidentiality and system security, their patients' records on the system through the track care system. And as you can see, we only have 30% of our registered doctor users accessing the system at this point. And this is a situation where the provinces need to drive their doctors to use this benefit that we have put in place for the system and for our patients. In terms of the Tusano system in 1.4.4, we just need to clarify that this is a billing portal that the provinces can access. So again, this is for our customers, our provinces, to be able to use. It doesn't affect our ability to bill the provinces nor their ability to pay us. But we've sorted out the problem now, and they are well able to access this. And then our response times to our IT problems. So if the IT system isn't working in a laboratory, we were able to deal with 83% within our prescribed time frames when we were aiming for 95. And at first glance, that may not look ideal, but remembering that some of these laboratories are in the north of Zululand, in the hills of the Eastern Cape, that we have to get to solve problems. So 83% is not what we would like, but it's still quite a good performance. In terms of our staffing, you can see there that we achieved all but one of our performance targets, and you can see we have a low staff turnover, and we've been improving in a number of areas. Our employment equity is very strong. We're well ahead of our planned target. The one where we didn't meet our target, the percentage of contracted employees performance reviews, this is the performance review system that we did talk about before when we were last here. We were asked about it, and that system is kicking in, and so we're only at 63% now. We need to be beyond that, but the performance management system is evolving, and the data is improving, even though we didn't get to our target. In terms of the surveillance of communicable diseases, this is in particular the work of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, and I should just indicate to you that this has been under the very able leadership of Professor Shabir Mahdi for the last 6 years. Professor Mahdi has now just recently left the NHLS at the end of September, but the programs will continue to work well. We have proper arrangements in place, as we move towards Nipisa. And you can see here that we continue to do excellent disease surveillance in the country, cutting-edge research, and the one item that was in red there is the location of epidemiologists in the provinces to back up disease prevention and control. And even though we didn't get it by March the 31st, we're now in place. So there was just a lag in finalizing the training and appointment of the staff. So we trained the epidemiologists within the NHLS, and we're now in 7 of the 9 provinces. We have staff epidemiologists there. In terms of occupational health and safety, Dr. Sophia Kisting, the executive director there, had put in a huge number of performance targets, a great amount of detail, so I'm not going to take you through all of those, but what I can tell you is you can see there, with the exception, for example, of 3.3.3, where we have 9 projects with external partners instead of 12. A lot of that depends on requests for those services and things like that. You can see that if you go through page 22, page 23, page 24, 25, you'll see that it's just a swath of green where we met our performance requirements across a whole range of occupational health and safety services that we provide. If you look at our program 4 is our academic affairs, our research and our quality assurance. We have two sets of problems here. The first one is that not as many of our laboratories have been formally accredited as we would like. So this is what's called SANAS accreditation by an external body. But you can see that our big laboratories, our national central laboratories, have a 90% accreditation. And this process of accreditation is quite a laborious one. It involves detailed work, setting performance standards in the laboratories, internal reviews by our quality section, and then bringing in the external team from SANAS to review the laboratories. And the process is just taking longer than we had anticipated. But this does not mean there aren't good quality standards in the laboratories. So we have our internal quality standards to ensure that the tests are there. But I hope you note, for example, at the bottom, that our proficiency testing scheme, which is an internal way of making sure we're proficient, we scored 87% against a target of 80%. So our laboratories are proficient. The other item, which is on page 27, is our pass rates. And you can see there that we have not achieved the level of pass rates that we have set in our target. Now, the pass rates are not totally in our hands. Remember that we employ the medical doctors specializing in pathology, the registrars, as well as the medical technologists and technicians. But remember, they are trained through our universities, through our medical schools, through our University of Technology. So it's a joint responsibility between the NHLS and the universities and the Universities of Technology. And through our National Academic Pathology Committee, we are working with the deans, with the universities and the University of Technology to identify the obstacles and to put in place a program. We also have in the NHLS what we call expert committees. So each of the different pathology disciplines, like microbiology or hematology or anatomical pathology, has an expert committee. And those expert committees are also working on plans and strategies to put in place an improved pass rate in this. In terms of our research performance, you can see that this is we've achieved pretty well all of those targets. The number of research outputs translated into diagnostic practice, number 4.4.2, those vary from year to year because it depends whether your research findings have brought out a research patent or other kinds of diagnostic practice processes. But in fact, our research outputs almost always influence policy. So this is a problematic indicator because we are doing research all the time on HIV, on TB, on many other diseases, diarrheal diseases, respiratory diseases, our team on World Health Organization expert committees and many other things. So in fact, hundreds of our research articles and our products are going back into strengthening the health system all the time. And it's just a question of how we define what we mean by translation into diagnostic practice. In terms of the laboratory service, remember this is the core of the NHS. It's providing a laboratory service for all the public hospitals and clinics in the country. And you can see here that every provincial, tertiary and national central hospital has a laboratory on site. 74% of district hospitals have that, and we collect specimens daily from every single primary healthcare facility in the public sector in the country, thousands of them. And I think that's just to give you a sense of the scale, that we are collecting specimens every day in primary healthcare facilities around the country. So think about your constituencies, think about the health centers and clinics and where they're located. We are there every day. In terms of the performance, I highlighted a few of those in the summary before, but you can see that when you are judging us as a performance-based national health laboratory tests, you can see that we are exceeding the targets that were set based on historical practice in every single case. And I just want to, I've mentioned the HIV and the TB tests already, but I want to take you to 5.2.6. And we think this is a very important advance. There's been a lot of concern about sexual and reproductive health, around women's health, and around the prevalence of cervical cancer and early treatment. And you can see that although we planned our target was to get 50% of results out within the specified time frame, we got 97% out. And I think that's for me, is a very impressive development. It was linked to some changes in methodology. And if you have a look at the bottom at 5.2.7, besides HIV and TB, the core of our laboratory tests are providing laboratory diagnostic information to clinicians in our hospitals to act rapidly and decisively to improve the care of their patients. Remember that most medical decisions are made with the support of laboratory information to help the diagnosis and guide the treatment. And you can see here in the routine use, the most common laboratory test that doctors depend on, you can see that we came in at 86% of the tests were within our performance time frames, above our 80% target. You can see again that this particular slide, the 5.5, is around the issues of accreditation and legal requirements, and you can see there that we've exceeded the legal requirements. In terms of the automated testing, we had set a target of 90%, but that was overly ambitious because not every test can be automated. Some of them have to be more manually done. And I think this, the 78% against 90, we didn't put it in red, even though we hadn't achieved it, because in a way this in itself is 78% is a good performance, recognizing that many tests have to be done manually. In terms of the percentage of provincial tertiary laboratories with pre-analytic automation, we have to just accelerate the procurement of the analyzers that are required for that. Importantly, in terms of customer satisfaction, we're hitting more or less the 75% that we had set to in our target, you can see that. If we go to human resources management, I've already alluded to the fact that we have a strong aspects to our human resources, and I you'll notice there that at the bottom, the relations with organized labor continue to show improvement, and I think I would like, as the chairperson of the board, to particularly appreciate the contribution of Nahawu in bringing irregularities in the organization to our attention for the board to act on. There's ongoing training and continuing learning in the NHLS, and you can see that in terms of our employment changes, our staffing is quite stable, our employment equity targets are well on track. If you have a look at the, not just in the lower levels of staff, but at the senior levels of staff, and if you look at gender as well, you'll see quite a good employment equity profile. So I have left 20 minutes, Acting Chair, to share with you some of the financial performance aspects of the NHLS. And in this regard, I'll try and give you some background to help you through the understanding of the situation in the NHLS, because some of these are technical accounting aspects that appear in the audited financial statement. So the first thing to say to you is that this year we have a deficit of $1.9 billion. Now the question is, how can the NHLS be in a similar financial position to the year before and yet change from a small surplus to a serious deficit? And the situation is that our auditors indicated to us that the money, historic money owed by Gauteng and KZN from previous years, some of which was in dispute, and I'll come back to that later, we could no longer count that as an asset. We had to make provision for this as a doubtful debt. Not all of it in full, but some of it had to be provided for as a doubtful debt. So this figure here of a deficit of $1.9 billion does not mean that last year we spent $1.9 billion more than we earned. I want to be very clear about that. Last year, we brought in the money that we spent. So we did not overspend against our income, and we did not end up in a worse financial position than we were in. The $1.9 billion deficit is an accounting deficit on the basis of writing down doubtful debt from going back to 2014 and before, as well as 14-15 and 15-16 financial years. So that is an important message that people need to understand. We did not spend more money than we earned from the services we provided. The total revenue, we earned more revenue than we budgeted for, and that was because provinces came with a higher demand for laboratory tests. So for example, the new national test and treat policy for HIV, the increasing number of patients accessing services, meant that provinces ordered 4.8% more laboratory tests the last financial year than the previous one. So as I said before, the third bullet there is that the current year deficit was driven by an increase in doubtful debt provision of $2.5 billion. So that is what has made that $1.9 billion deficit, is the provision for this $2.5 billion rands worth of doubtful debt in relation to the debts of Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. You can see there that our revenue grew from 6.4 to 7.1 billion, and you can see that most of our revenue comes from the provinces, either from the equitable share or the conditional grants from the national department. You can see that our production costs grew from 4.8 to 5.8 billion because of our increases in labor costs, our test volumes, and our price increases in the goods we procure and fluctuations in the exchange rate. What we need to point out to you is many of the equipment, a lot of the equipment we use and many of the materials we use in the laboratories, the chemicals for the testing are imported, and if the exchange rate fluctuates, we end up paying more for those services. Again, when it says here that our operational costs increased by 91%, that does not mean that we spent 91% more on staff, on laboratory materials and things like that. This 91% increase in operational costs is because of the provision for doubtful debt. So you have to put the doubtful debt comes in two places. It pushes your deficit up and it pushes your operational costs up because you're putting that into your financial statements. And I think that's very important to understand, but in the nature of audit reports, they don't give all the explanations for that, they just insist that you make that provision. Our assets again decreased from 3.9 billion to 2.9 billion, again because we have a smaller bank balance, so our bank balance was lower, we only had 391 million in the bank at the end of the financial year, but again the provision for doubtful debt, because you can't count doubtful debt as an asset, it's there. However, and I'll explain later, we are still anticipating that we will receive payments from KZN Gauteng for the historic debt. So even though it's down there, the doubtful debt, in our sense, we are still expecting a good proportion of that to be paid, and I'll explain that just now. We obviously had to make provision for leave provision and the debt owed to our creditors, which increased our liability. We slightly overspent on our capital budget, and a lot of that was to do with improvements needed in IT equipment and infrastructure, which I explained to you, you saw in our performance targets that we had some challenges in meeting our IT performance targets because of aging infrastructure and dilapidated and systems, and so we had to invest because that is a core element of our platform, is to have our laboratory services working. If you have a look at our revenue collection, to explain this to you, is we collected 6.3 billion in revenue, 5.3 billion was for bills issued in the 2016-17 financial year, and 1 billion was to pay for debts incurred in the previous financial year. So when we bill provinces, each bill has a number and a time frame, and a hospital and so on. So when the provinces pay, they pay against a particular invoice number, and 1 billion of what was paid to us was for debt for the previous financial year, and 5.3 billion was for 2016-17 debts. And the provinces have committed to continue to pay the outstanding amount that they owe us for last year, and in fact we've already received 1.2 billion in this financial year paying back for money from the fall. Now, we constantly engage with the provinces to follow up with on the outstanding debt. And I just wanted to share with you this question of a going concern. And what I want to emphasize is that the NHLS is a going concern. As long as provinces pay in full for the services they incur in the current financial year. So we don't tell the provinces how many tests to order. They order it through their doctors, they have their systems for managing the request orders. Our fees are set by the minister, fee increases are set by the Minister of Health in consultation with the provinces. They were 5.3%. which is a very low fee increase. And what we're saying is, if the provinces pay us this year in accordance with what the laboratory tests ordered and what they procure, the NHLS will be a going concern. So the NHLS does not need a bailout. The NHLS is solvent as long as the provinces pay what they ask us, the test, for the test they ask us to do for them. However, we are in a precarious situation because we owe our creditors, the people who supply our equipment, our materials, laboratory and other services, we have a debt to them. And therefore it is essential to clear that debt and to invest in our equipment and our upgrades of our laboratories, that Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal need to pay off some of their historic debt. And what I can say is we're in ongoing engagement with Gauteng and KZN. In some cases, not everything that we bill them for should be paid. We've identified some billing errors, but we have, for example, agreed with the MEC for Health in Gauteng and the acting HOD exactly what they owe the NHLS for historic debt, and they are in the process of taking it through the province with a view to coming with a proposal to settle that debt. In KZN, there's a proportion of the debt which is agreed, and there are other proportions that we are still engaging the province on, but what is absolutely critical is we do need some payment into those historic debts to allow the NHLS to pay our creditors and bring our creditors' book up to date and to improve our IT infrastructure. If the provinces do not pay us in accordance with the services they've procured and we bill them for, we will be under threat as a going concern. So that is the situation, emphasizing again that it's our role to deliver affordable pathology health services to our country. We do that far cheaper than the private sector provides services for the same basket of tests, and so we look forward to good payments this year that stabilizes the NHLS. Now, as I said before, I'm sorry that the CEO at the time and the CFO at the time of this financial year, 2016-17 financial year, are not here to answer to this slide. What I am pleased to tell you is that in the matter of irregular expenditure, the board, through its diligence and its systems, and in this regard I'd like to thank the chairperson of our finance committee, Mr. Andre Fenter, who's not here, and to tell you that the chairperson of our Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Lunga Nchinga, passed away in a motor car accident suddenly just recently. We were at his funeral. And the two of them have played a vital role in the board in this regard. And that most of what is identified here as irregular expenditure had been pointed to the auditors by the board, that we found them, I think this is very important, that we found these problems. We identified them and we pointed them to the auditor. So we need to emphasize that this irregular expenditure, number one, was most of it was identified by the board, not found by the auditors as a surprise. And number two, that this is irregular expenditure. It's not fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So it's irregular, but not fruitless and wasteful. Now, I want to share with you, though, because it's really a worry, that our irregular expenditure increased from 28 million to 1 billion in one financial year. And the question is, how could that happen? So I think there are a couple of reasons. The first one is we feel that our auditors had missed some of the things in previous financial years, and they may have been covered up by the then executive leadership of the NHLS. So we think that some of these problems, or in fact we're fairly confident that some of these problems were actually there in previous financial years and should have been picked up by our auditors. And in a way, if we hadn't picked them up ourselves as the board and the new acting executive management team after the suspensions of the CEO and CFO, would the auditors have found them themselves? So the reasons for the irregular expenditure, there were 575 million rand spent on expired contracts. So there were contracts that were tendered, they'd expired, but new contracts had not been issued and new tenders not put in place. And so that 575 million, we'd procured the goods against an expired tender, but the services are there. I want to talk to number three and four, and then I'll come back to number two. So number three, we had made payments to suppliers worth 194 million without a contract. And number four, our database was old, so the CEO and CFO, who are now suspended, did not have a system in place where they had all the contracts on a database which says expires on this date, 6 months before issue a new contract, a new tender, appoint it, and then renew contracts, come up with new contracts or renewed contracts. So we have now got a database in place where we've got all the dates of the expiry of the contracts, and we are now in the process of setting up not only a proper database, but regularizing all expired contracts through proper procurement systems and through both for your expired contracts and payments without contracts. So we're cleaning that whole process up. We have here contracts exceeding delegation of authority of 210 million. And those of you who are here when I presented previously will recall that I told you that suspended the CEO, CFO, supply chain manager, and head of internal audit, and subsequently our facilities manager related to this particular area. You'll recall that we had whistleblower allegations brought to our attention through Nahawu that dealt with a certain set of allegations, and then we had identified three areas of procurement, two in the IT space and one in the transport space, where either the contract had been issued beyond the delegation and without proper bid adjudication and board approval. So any procurement above 10 million rand has to come to the board. So it has to be assessed by the bid adjudication committee. It has to go to the finance committee of the board, who make a recommendation to the board. And in the three procurements involved, contracts were signed beyond 10 million rand. The combination of the three is up to 210 million rand without it appearing at the finance committee or the board of the NHLS. And those are core to the suspensions of the CEO, the CFO, the supply chain manager, and the reports to the office of the chief procurement officer and to the South African Police Service. And so we had identified those, and in fact the CEO and CFO were suspended in February, late in February. The audit took place obviously only in May, June, July. So we had already identified these problems and acted decisively on them. And that's why you'll see in this slide here that I indicate that the board has played an active oversight role, and through our diligence we have picked up the irregular expenditure and acted on them. In terms of the audits, we are required to respond to the Independent Regulatory Board for auditors within 30 days of receipt of the audited financial statements, and we have done that, and as I said earlier, we have a system in place to fix this up. I'm not going to spend long on the South African vaccine producers. It's a small subsidiary of the NHLS. around vaccine production. It has an unqualified audit, a small surplus, and the technical insolvency that remains is around historic debt within the NHLS and the agreements related to it. Acting Chair, you'll see that I'm within my 45 minutes that you told me, we believe that we, as a board, we want to look after what is a strategic national asset, providing a critical role in our healthcare system and in the service of our people, in particular the poor, and our board will continue to drive good governance and fiscal management. As we presented to you in our strategic plan, we have a variety of strategies and processes in place to seek efficiency gains and to continually provide better value for money, improve our operational efficiencies and our turnaround times, and serve our people and our provinces and our national department well. Thank you.
No, thanks very much, Chair, for the presentation. Before I ask members to raise issues that they might have an interest on, I'll ask the DDG to, just to make comment, what is your reaction on the annual report of NHLS?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the key challenges that we face in terms of the NHLS is firstly the difficulty that the NHLS experiences in terms of payment of accounts by provinces, and of hoping through the amendment of the NHLS bill we will remedy the financing model that they currently experience, because that clearly puts significant pressure on the NHLS in terms of trying to deliver an essential service. I think the second area is around internal controls that exist within the NHLS. I think that the board needs to get a sense of where there are deviations from policy much earlier than when it does currently, because largely most of these issues that relate to the CFO and CEO came to light through the how whistleblowing to the board, but it would be important to have systems in place so that the board can get these signals earlier than that, so that we can arrest these problems when they arise, rather than allow them to fester and only when you're hoping for it. Come tonight. I think that's the key issues for us.
Well, thanks very much. It's now an opportunity for members to raise whatsoever issues that they want to raise on the rule and cons on. Who else wants to make an intervention on the rule and cons? Those are only two hands. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. It's very clear that there are serious challenges in the NHLS. It's not only what the DDG is mentioning. It's a problem of morale. Especially the staff, you know, staff morale is key. I'm saying this because in the report itself, there's quite a huge number of resignations, warnings, under misconduct, you know, written warnings and final warnings and you know, that kind of action, yes, it needed to be taken, but what does it mean? What does it really mean for the entity as far as the staff morale is concerned? And in as far as delivery and service delivery is concerned, maybe we should get some explanation as to why, for instance, the 241 employees resigned, and is it because of the skills that they don't have, or is it because there is low retention strategy that has been in place during this financial year? Dismissals, 15 of them. Letters, written warning and final, 28, 33. Yeah, I think we need some explanation on that. And another question is on the 12.2 million grants which were not spent in the reporting period. Maybe we could get some clarity on that as to why that didn't happen. Another one for me is the 348 employees who had their employment terminated, including the 241 that I had already mentioned who resigned. And how many properties that NHLS own, but not in its entity registered. In terms of the Act, you know, properties and assets, they need to be registered. But I can see from the report that transfer process is in process. The transfer is in process. And in other words, it's unfolding. But maybe some indication as to by when do they think, or does the entity think it would be finalized, this transfer process, because it is quite a concern. Yeah, I have some more, but I'll end there for now.
Thank you. Honourable
Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm glad that the department has started the presentation by acknowledging the irregular expenditure in that entity, because we're very worried of the status of the finance of the department, especially after a very good year last year, where you had a good balance at the end of the year, good surplus, and this year we have more than a billion, close to 2 billion of irregular expenditure. Does the department have now measures in place to make sure that doesn't happen again? Because you must remember, this impacts on service delivery. It impacts on the poor of the poor, the results and everything else. Also, what we would like to know is in page, firstly, let me start with the province, the payments of the provinces. How many provinces are still in the red? How many provinces still give problems in terms of paying? You must remember the payments of the provinces assist the entity to be able to do them properly. How many of them? And another problem is the problem of scarce still leaving the department, how many of them are there? People that you know that, you know, it's hard to find. If they leave, it is a battle to get people to replace their positions, and which also again impacts on service delivery, because once we have, we're out of staff, then you cannot really so really do your work properly. And let me go to page, I think it's page 41. Because I must say last year this department was had very good success, and we really appreciated it. But now in 1 year, it's more than $1 billion that is in the red. But I'm glad because you actually tried to explain to us, you know, a number of ways of what that means, and you know, just hope that it's not going to happen again next year, because now that the CEO and you easily defended yourself by saying the CEO has been suspended, you know, just to get yourself out of the situation. The people that will answer for the loss are not suspended. But let's just hope that they are systems in place to make sure that it doesn't happen again. In page 41, the capital expenditure overspend is due to the rollout of computers. We don't know how much of that money is. You know, all the other monies are set there. There's 3.9 billion or asset decrease. There's, you know, there's 18 million overspend budget on capital. But now the IT, I don't see any money attached, so that you know how much money was. And coming to Gauteng and KZN, this has been going on for a long time. And I think even last year it came up again. How far in your deliberations are they really coming, going to give some payments, do some real payments on what they're supposed to pay, so that we the next year we don't really go back and you come there again with the same story. Sometimes it really gets boring to listen to the same story over and over again, and you wonder if really are there any any deliberations over how are you going to pay and what this really needs to be settled. It's been going on for a long while. I think the doubtful debt, I tried to get it in my mind as capital being with this doubtful debt is not really making. I wish you could, you know, yesterday we had a very school from the office of the Auditor General, where everything was put in place so easily that we could easily understand. It was very people friendly, you know, in details. It was so easy to understand. Now, the doubtful debt, you begin, you must remember, not all accountants sitting here would understand your lingo of accounting. And I'm thinking, now the doubtful debt, the more, because to us, that's irregular expenditure, and you continue to make it, you know, put some words, and I'm sitting and singing, you know, at some stage the chairperson said, you know, you must really look at your lingo terms, you don't really understand it, you really make it, so we understand, we take, from my understanding, I thought this is a regular expenditure, and you put it, no, it's not, so please try and make it easy, so that we can also easily understand, taking into consideration that we're not all accounting clear, but just for us to understand that this is so much and this is how, and that, so that we all easily can, as if, not as if you're trying to hide something, so that we can make us really understand how everything. Thank you, Chairperson, for that.
Thank you, Chair. We would like to know why you
referred to the fact that you serve the poor people. I didn't get you very well to say that you serve the poor people. I thought you serve everybody nationally. So maybe you could explain why you emphasize that you're serving poor people. When is your payment problem with KZN and how they are going to be sorted out? It looks like it's a perennial problem that is actually threatening to make the NHLS bankrupt or yeah, something like that. That it threatened to make the whole thing to be not a going concern, technically bankrupt, they say. And I thought that there were some methods or which were taken to try to resolve that. That's frightening, because if you collapse, you understand that it is a serious. So you can't wait until you collapse before you do something about that. And as for now, are you able to pay creditors? And this irregular expenditure that had gone from 28 million to 1 billion is frightening, because it didn't happen in a day. I think so. It was a process. And why was it not kept before it became such a serious threat to the establishment? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, ma'am. My issue is based on a mention made on the percentage of contracted employees' performance review, which is scheduled to be concluded biannually. And under the reasons for deviation from a planned target, a mention is made that it's not achieved. Why? It was not concluded due to the labor relations issues in management, which obviously leads us to the question that is the environment in NHLS conducive for employees to do their work? And is the entity doing all possible to support its workforce? And it leads us also to the second question also that deals with the percentage of laboratories accredited, and where in reason is mentioned that not achieved due to staff constraints in quality assurance. I mean, quality assurance plays a very, very important role. If it is not done, how would you be able to access, you know, to access the success of the whole institution as it may be, specifically in the laboratories? And it also leads us to the very same question asked: is the environment at NHLS conducive for employees to do their own work? The following one is based on the provinces that are owing. And a mention was made that the provinces have indicated their commitment to pay the outstanding balance. But when? I mean, maybe it's the same thing that is said from January, now it's October, that there is a commitment made by the provinces to pay back the money, but they haven't done that so far. And it leads you to the problem that NHLS is experiencing right now, to say we cannot be able to can proceed because of the lack of money. And it arises from that outstanding balance that I acquired from the provinces. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, honorable members. Okay, honorable.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Sorry that I missed the opportunity. I just got a few questions. Can the entity maybe inform the committee on the status of the suspended CFO, chief financial officer, and head of supply? Like it seems like the entity doesn't have management currently in terms of how will it turn around in terms of the entity itself. Is the entity's finances able to carry it forward given its challenges with recouping historical debt? Is the entity's finances able to carry it forward given its challenges with the recouping historic debt? And, yeah. Thank you.
No, thanks very much, honorable members. Well, let me just also raise a few issues. One of the issues is around, let me just start with the irregular expenditure. I don't get a sense from the board as you're presenting that the irregular expenditure is a problem. I didn't get that sense. You seem to be saying, no, it has happened, but it's not a big deal. That's the sense I'm getting. I'm raising this because the board can't come before the committee and boast on saying no. In any way, we discovered the irregular expenditure. I mean, that's not what we want. We want you to prevent irregular. That's a main issue. That it's you who has discovered it, it's immaterial to us. The issue is prevention of irregular expenditure. It doesn't occur. But you seem to be glad that no, there is irregular expenditure, but in any way, that was discovered by us. And then it's a good thing because it was discovered by you. That's the impression I was getting as the chair was presenting. And I don't think it's a correct posture. Because our worry is irregular expenditure. And if you look why, how this irregular expenditure was behind, it's that it was not following bidding processes. And when somebody doesn't follow bidding processes, there's an element of corruption that you might have involved. Hence, people are running away from the bidding processes because they want to allocate to their friends. Hence, they avoid the bidding process. So it's a very worrying fact. Some officials not declaring their interest, of which the failure to declare interest, even they've got a direct interest on the matter. And therefore they become a beneficiary in the system. It's what we call the javelin. You throw it, you decide you're going to find it the other side. And it's a problem. We don't get a sense of that there are systems in place
the board has put up system in place and measures to prevent irregular expenditure. We don't get that sense because you had irregular expenditure of 29 million. You've increased it to 1 billion rand. When you incur the 29 billion, you should have rang a bell to you to say there's a crisis, there's a problem. Then you should have started putting system in place then. But even now, as you are presenting, I didn't get a sense of what measures and systems as a board you are putting in place to prevent this recurrence of irregular expenses. I didn't get that sense. And we want to understand, how are you ensuring that going forward this doesn't occur? System and measures in place. The second worrying factor is the ability of NHLS to collect payments. And we still don't get a sense as to how are you going to resolve the problem. Because if you look at your books, your financials, it's not just the issue of KZN and Gauteng. According to you, this report is that you've got about 6 billion rand that you are being owed. And all provinces are owing you, according to this financial report. All of them, they are owing you, without exception. Not a single one doesn't owe you. The only one that is owing you the least, it's Northern Cape and Western Cape. Well, it's true that it's KZN and Gauteng, they're highly owing out of that. But all provinces are owing you. Where lies the problem? And how are you dealing with that problem? Is the current system not working? Or, so that we understand, the system is not working, and therefore it needs to be changed, and what are you proposing? I'm raising this because this is it's what I raised yesterday. It's a big triple R process. It's a budget review. Which means it's an opportunity where departments, entities comes and present and therefore indicate what are the challenges that they are encountered and what are they proposing in order to intervene in the challenges that they are having. That's why it's a budget review. But you don't get the sense that no, you've got a challenge, therefore this is what you are proposing going forward we need to consider as a portfolio committee, because we must make a recommendation that must then, in terms of the law during this process, what we are recommending must be considered by finance, by treasury. And treasurer is compelled by law that whatsoever recommendation we're going to be making this time around through this process they must be able in February, when the minister tabled the budget, be able to respond on the issues. But what are we going to be telling Treasurer about your issues? Because they have not tell us what are your issues. But we know that we are not in good shape. When we visited you, fortunately you were not there, Chair. The then acting CEO, because you are changing left and right, the then acting CEO told us that if there's no something extraordinary happen, you will not be able to pay salaries after next month. Has that situation changed? Because we're told, we're even shocked, because our understanding, when you came and presented, and it was yourself, Chair, you told us we've got a surplus. But all of a sudden, when we met, it was in July, and we met you in May. In May, you told us there is a surplus. But 2 months down the line, you're telling us, no. We are in a financial difficulty, and if there's nothing extraordinary happen in November, will be the last time we're paying staff for salaries. We don't know where the situation now, and we are not saying anything about it. Whether that extraordinary measures is already, or there was a lightning that came and changed the situation, or a miracle happened between the 2 months, because when the meeting was July, it's August, now it's September. Has the miracle happened now that you are not saying anything about it? You are fine right now, because nobody is talking about it. And that's the process that we must talk about it, because it's a budget review. That's the time in which you must tell us about it. Not in April, May, when you're dealing with your APP. It's not the time for telling us about your budget problem. The only time to tell us about your budget problem is now. What are the challenges? What then are you thinking or recommending going forward, so that we're able, then when you compile our report, we're able to include the issues that you have raised, so that the treasurer is able to take them into consideration. My interest is to understand the extent to which the current system is working or not working. I hear the DD say, no, we've got the bill before us, and then that bill is going to assist in addressing the problem. But we've got a problem now. The bill is something that will pass somewhere next year. Because after us, it goes to the NGOP. So it might take the whole year next year. Still being in parliamentary process. And then from there, the president maybe will sign it, possible after next year. But the problem is now with NHLS. What is it that, in your view, needs to be done in order to address that problem? As a stopgap measure to make sure that the NHLS remain fluid, because it is currently not fluid. So if you can just get an indication as to where are we standing in relation to that matter. so that we've got an understanding. And then the issue of staff contracts, I see 280 contract staff has expired. What are the implications of that? You can just explain that. I see in the report that 280 contract has expired. What does it mean in practice? The work that they've been performing, who's going to remain performing them? Because if it has expired, it means you've terminated the service with them. And if you've not terminated the service, or you keep on paying them, it also is going to be one of the financial it will contribute to your financial challenges on the auditors come, because you will have paid them illegally, irregular, and therefore it's going to contribute to that. Just to get an indication, but I see in that human resource report, it just say 280 without explaining contracts expired, whether they are gone in the system. And therefore, what exactly does it mean in practice? How, to what extent is it going to affect or not affect services that we're supposed to be rendering? And then on program 5, laboratory services, it reflects that you've got staff constraint. And then, because you've got staff constraints, how are you resolving those constraints? That's one. But two, having that staff constraint, but you are overspent in that program. And you have overspent, but you have not even achieved your targets 100%. But the money is gone. But you are also understaffed. Can you just correlate the two, because they don't correlate? You can just correlate the two, because there's no correlation at all. The issue that honorable members are raising about this historic death of Gauteng and KZN. We've been talking about this thing since my arrival here in Parliament. Will it ever going to end? At some point we're told, no, there is a mediation. And therefore the matter is about to be resolved. There's a mediation that is working on the matter. So the matter is being resolved. At some point we told no, not sure whether it's case, then final agreed that no, they owe you and they're going to pay you. But at some point we told that Gauteng was insisting that they don't owe you. And when we met with them last year, and they said, no, we don't owe NHLS. In fact, we think NHLS owes us. That was their view. I mean, this matter can't be going on forever. At some particular point, there must be a solution to the problem. Does the board have any plan to finally resolve this matter? So that it can't remain and being told that story for now and again. Because you're saying, no, it creates a problem in terms of your financial, with the historical debt and all those matters, and therefore it's now becoming a doubtful one, whether you will be able to recover it or not. And what is your view? Are you going to recover the money? Or you've done everything there that you possibly could have done? Because if you've done everything that you could have possibly done, and it's obvious that the money is not recoverable, why not write it off? Because if you've arrived at the conclusion that the money is not recoverable, and you are able to produce all the steps that you've taken to recover the money, and it's becoming impossible, then you must then put up a system to write off the debt so that you remove it from your books. But you can't keep on telling us about it year in and year out without a solution to the problem. As if, and we are not owned by a private sector or somebody, we are owned by the very state institution, in our state institution. So how can you not resolve your issues amongst yourself and clear this thing once and for all? If you can just further clarify this issue that Honorable James was raising, because the AG, though it's not the one that is auditing you, based on the audit outcome by Nsalu, the AG is saying your liabilities exceeds the assets by 19 million, more than 19 million. They don't say, no, it's a doubtful debt and therefore it's not a problem. They said, no, your financial viability as an institution is questionable. You are not financially viable as an institution because your liability exceeds the assets, and we've got a deficit of more than close to 2 billion rand. And let's say it's material uncertainty. It's material uncertainty, which should not be left unattended. At some particular point, it should be attended. As I'm saying, I'm not sure whether we should wait until we resolve the matter through a legislative process. There is no any other way of resolving it besides the legislative process. We need to understand that, so that at least you must be able to tell us what is it that we think needs to be done. So that I'm not sure the extent to which treasurer is involved in this whole thing. So that we understand the extent to which you have involved treasurer. But at least when we write our own report, we are able to say what is it that we think treasurer needs to do in assisting you to resolve the problem, so that we are able to compel them from this side to make an intervention as treasurer into the matter, so that when we write our reports and the recommendation and submit to Parliament, they will be forced in February to tell us what is it that they think needs to be done in assisting you to resolve the problem. If they are reluctant to do so, we don't know how treasurer is is helping you to deal with the problem. Not just with the problem of KZN and Gauteng, but the totality of the problem of provinces being unable to pay you on time or to pay you as required, will require that to have an understanding from me, the extent to which Treasury is involved, so that if there's no involvement of Treasury, what do you think we need to do so that we try to force Treasury to become part of the problem in one way or another. And once Treasury becomes part of the problem, I'm sure they will have to come up with a solution of how best to assist you to resolve this problem of provinces not cooperating. Because provinces might not be cooperating because they don't want to, no. Because they are also financially constrained. And for them, this matter doesn't become a priority. How do you deal with that problem then? From a budget point of view, from a treasurer point of view, because the money is part of the equitable share that gets allocated by provinces which ourselves and yourself have got no jurisdiction over. But treasurer can intervene and see how this matter then get resolved going forward, because it is a going concern for all of us. We'll break for 5 minutes just to give you a space to decide who answered what, and then we'll then come back just to give you time to okay. Can we break for 5 minutes and then give you space to decide who answered what?
start, we'll hand over to you, Chair, to indicate who does what, whether you're responding yourself on everything, or you'll delegate certain to others. That's up to yourself.
Thank you, Acting Chair. The I'll start the response, and then Mr. Wickner will respond to some financial issues, Mr. Kize around HR, Dr. Tucker around academic pathology and research, and others as necessary. So I wanted to start with the question about referring to serving the poor. Just to clarify that in terms of the Act, our responsibility is to provide laboratory services for the public sector. So in South Africa, about 17% of South Africans are on private medical schemes. They would get care in the private sector and tend to use private for-profit laboratories would be used for their laboratory tests. And our job is to ensure that the Section 27 rights of progressive realization of access to health care in the context of laboratory and pathology services is met for all South Africans, as well as, of course, our responsibilities in training pathologists and technologists, as well as doing research relevant to the country. In terms of the financial situation and the measures taken and a number of questions in that regard. So first of all, we have been working hand in hand with the ministry and with the Department of Health, the Minister and Department of Health, and Dr. Pillay, I'm sure, will brief you himself about the measures that they have taken. We have addressed the National Health Council, the National Health Council Technical Committee repeatedly around the situation. We've also gone to what's called the 10-by-10 meeting of Treasury and heads of health departments, national and provincial, and presented and discussed there. And I have also personally met with the head of the health, chief director who covers the health portfolio in the Treasury, as well as the interprovincial section of the Treasury recently to go over the situation and to seek their help. In this matter, the Director General is engaged with the provinces, but there's still quite a lot of work So there's the MEC for Gauteng's office calling to set up a meeting about this debt. While I was speaking, they messaged me to say, can I come for a meeting on Thursday at 11? I think there's still quite a lot of support that we could receive from Treasury in resolving these matters, and I'll explain that. In terms of the general debt from the provinces that you correctly picked up in the report, the situation is that 7 of the 9 provinces are modest amounts behind in different amounts, but modest amounts behind in payment, and that tends to have been a historical pattern where they pay, but then the last few months of the year, January, February, March, when the budgets are squeezed, the payments go down, and when the new budget comes in, they start to use this year's budget to clear last year's debt and then move on. So the last few months of every year is where the debt tends to accumulate. With regard to KZN, last year KZN paid 102% of what they were billed in the year. So KZN paid what they were billed, but didn't go back to deal with historic debt. The situation in Gauteng for last year was dire. So last year, Gauteng pays, there are two tracks in our billing. The one is around the conditional grant. And on that, they paid 80% of that. But on the equitable share bills for general laboratory services, they paid, Gauteng paid only 36%. So the greatest proportion of our recent debt is from Gauteng. And to date this year, we have not only not received back payment for last year, but we've been underpaid for services for this year. And I'll explain what has been happening since. Now, I'll explain to you where we are with KZN and Gauteng and the debt, and then I'll go back to the very astute questions about where does that leave the NHLS going forward and how do we see things. So the situation with KZN is we have met with the MEC and the HOD, and in the historic debt, so this is going back to 2014 and before, and out of that debt, we've had, you spoke about the reviews and the accountant general's office and so on. We have proposed that a certain amount of the bills that we had as part of a settlement agreement, that the NHLS should write off a certain amount in terms of some of the categories of expenditure, and that the rest KZN should owe. In the period before 2012, there's an agreement that KZN owes 571 million rand in the bills that were disputed up to that. So KZN has agreed, the Ministry of Health has agreed, NHLS has agreed, but no payment has been made against that amount. With regard to Gauteng, the situation now is that we have met with the MEC, the new MEC, and the acting HOD. We've reviewed the report of the Accountant General, and we have agreed between us that they will take to the Provincial Executive Committee, and I will take to the board, once they have approval from their Provincial Executive Committee, a settlement agreement on that disputed debt. And that we would write off certain amounts because if there was, for example, that we build an institution in Gauteng but is not the Gauteng Health Department, and there were some questions about what about people from different provinces and things, all these different things. So we have in place an agreement with the MEC for Gauteng and the acting HOD about the historic debt and the current debt since 2014. There's no dispute, but also not current payment. Now, I can't speak for Gauteng, but I'm aware that the matter has been discussed at the Provincial Executive Committee. They're asking for some further reviews, and there's discussion about the extent to which they may or may not be able to deal with some of that debt in the adjustment budgets. But I don't know if there is, what the plans are and how they would unfold and to what extent the NHLS might or might not be a beneficiary. In regard to Gauteng, the NHLS board, because we had been told that the current bills are approximately 152 million a month, the current use, that Gauteng would only pay us 106 million a month. Now, we cannot have a situation where we're going to lose about 600 million rand whole in our finances. So we, together with the historic debt from last year that hadn't been paid and the debt settlement, the board took a decision to take legal action to recover the funds. Now, that was a very difficult decision because, as you said, this public entity and a government department clashing on this. But we did write to them. They wrote back to us on the 106 million that they could guarantee, and they would see about other payments. And we have written back legally to say that is not acceptable to us. But we hope that we can avoid the litigation route and that we can reach agreement. The key is that the provincial treasury, I think, needs to be convinced, and there have been various meetings between the MEC, for health and finance, and the acting HOD for health, and the HOD in the Gauteng provincial treasury. So that's a broad background. So I became chair of the board in January, and I've been actively following up on these matters personally constantly. So you asked in terms of what the action is and whether this should be written off. It's our belief that it should not and cannot be written off. So that once we have dealt with disputes and reached a settlement agreement, some kind of payment arrangement has to be made, because if that is not made, how will we be able to pay off the 800 million plus that we owe our creditors, because our current bills and income will not deal with that. So we have to pursue the settlement amount. So once all the settlements are dealt with and some interest removed and various things, the figure that we're owed is around 4 billion. And we do have to recapitalize the NHLS, we do have to pay our creditors, and we do have to ensure that we have more funds in the bank so that we can guarantee our staff payments and other things. So in terms of the situation, there are two, in a way, two phases. The first one you've asked about is the longer term and how we deal with that. And as from next year, we will be introducing, with the support of the Department of Health, the modified capitated reimbursement model of payment by the provinces, which provides more upfront payments to the NHLS and will improve the payment situation. In terms of the current payments, you raised the question of, do the provinces prioritize paying us? Are we seen as a soft organization not to pay the bills to? I think that the provinces would have to answer that. We are appealing to Treasury to intervene, and any support in that regard from yourselves would be of great assistance to giving emphasis and impetus to the efforts. Dr. Pillay will tell you just now that the Director General of Health has personally herself been phoning provincial treasuries, amongst other things. In terms of Gauteng saying they don't owe the NHLS, the Gauteng MEC for Health and the Acting HOD agree and are clear and have informed the Treasury that they agree with us, that they owe us funds. So they're saying even if in a settlement agreement, a certain amounts are withdrawn, there's still a lot more that they owe us. So we do not owe Gauteng money. I think that needs to be very clear. The challenge is exactly what you say. That, as I said in my presentation, if the provinces pay us 100% of what they owe, then the NHLS will be able to meet its obligations. But if, for example, Gauteng pays 46 million less per month for 12 months, the NHLS cannot be a going concern. And that's why we've been engaging them, and this month Gauteng paid us a bit more than they paid previous months. So the answer is that it's imperative is for the provinces to pay. Not what they have the services they've requested. If they don't, the NHLS will not be financially viable. Is not financially viable. In terms of next year as well, we will have to discuss with the minister what our tariff increases should be. Our tariff increases have been well below inflation. They were 5.3%, but they've usually been 2 or 3%, and we may have to increase the tariffs, not to Eskom proposals for their tariff increases, but we may have to increase our tariffs in order to settle aspects of the finances of the NHLS. So the then acting chief financial officer can add to that, but we can say that we have a system now in place with service level agreements with the provinces that they have 30 days to dispute any bills, so that we don't get into these things that a year or 2 years later people go and dispute far back. And we have systems where our staff and the provincial staff review the bills on a regular basis and make sure that they are correct. So that is on the finances and the debt. With regard to the irregular expenditure, I think that the error in my presentation was not to emphasize the concerns sufficiently. The board is absolutely shocked. So the answer is that the board had repeatedly asked for database of all the contracts with the expiry dates, and we were not presented this at the board. And I think subsequent events shows why the CEO and CFO were not forthcoming with the information presented by the board. And you know, if I gave the impression that the board, you've got a sense that the board does not see the irregular expenditure as a problem, I think that is absolutely the wrong impression that I've given. The board has been distressed and distraught about this and has reviewed its governance, its oversight, its systems as to how this could be done under the table, under the watch of the CEO and CFO, and hidden from the board. And so we have taken measures now to deal with the weaknesses. So first of all, the first thing was that we said that no payment should be made without a valid contract. So if a supplier sent a bill to say we've done this, the question was where's the contract to go with it, and to put in the proper contract management system. We've created a database of all contracts and everyone we're contracting with to provide services and cross-checked it against proper contracts and proper bidding procedures. We've strengthened the bid adjudication committee processes in procurement. And we've done an audit of all procurement amounts above 10 million rand. In particular, not that we're not looking at the smaller amounts, but to particularly focus on that. So we put in place a series of measures to deal with the situation. And as you indicated, you know, you've got that whole chain, facilities manager, supply chain manager, internal CFO and CEO, and you have to make sure that if there's action that may have been taken collectively by them to keep things out of the sight of the board and to manage inappropriately, that our systems are strong enough to pick them up earlier than we did. So I want to be very clear that this is a matter of extreme concern. If that wasn't the impression I gave, then I apologize for that. And the very first question I got was around our internal controls. And I hope we've answered that, but we can go into it in more detail for Mr. Wittner if necessary. In terms of I just want to double check the in terms of my answers. The status of the suspensions. My apologies. That was the other question I wanted to answer. But before that, you asked about my ability to carry forward given the debt. So the answer is that at the moment, as long as the payments continue to flow from the provinces, we are able to pay our staff, and we are able to keep our debtors more or less stable. So we owe our creditors 800 million rand in round figures. It fluctuates, it goes up to 900, but we are at least able to pay them in line with what we order. So if we order 200 million in a month, we're more or less able to pay 200 million. But we're not able to bring down our debt to our creditors. In terms of the status of the suspensions and the how we're managing, from the board's perspective, we received our forensic audit and identified the other irregularities in February, and we had issued the disciplinary charges against the CEO and CFO by April. So within 2 months, they were charged. We have an independent presiding officer, and our legal advisors are presenting the cases. In a way, we can't control the speed of these matters. There are procedures and processes. We could only control the speed at which we charged them, which was within 2 months of identifying the irregularities. We have to await the outcome of the disciplinary hearings. In terms of the two staff members who resigned in the face of their disciplinary charges, those posts are vacant and we can fill them with permanent replacements. With regard to the CEO, CFO and Head of Internal Audit, they are suspended on a precautionary suspension, so we can only replace them with acting staff, and that's why we had Professor Mardy acting for the period of 6 months, and that's why we've approached the Department of Health and through with them the Government Technical Advisory Centre for Dr. Kami to act as the CEO of the NHLS for a period of up to 6 months. And as you know, Dr. Chetty, many of you will know her from her period as the Deputy Director General in Gauteng and in the National Department of Health, and then for a period as the head of the Department of Health in Gauteng. She is very familiar with issues of HR, of procurement, of IT systems development and planning. And we felt that we did not have, as a board, we did not have somebody internally who had the expertise and experience necessary to drive this process forward as a CEO. And that's why, hand in hand with the Department of Health, we approached GTAC. And that is part of our remedial measures. I also wanted to say to you that the CEO and CFO took the board to the CCMA and alleged that their suspensions were irregular, that they were vindictive and unfair and many other things. We did receive last week the arbitration award from the CCMA that ruled in favor of the board, saying that the suspensions are valid and legal, that they continue to remain suspended. In terms of management, we have moved to bring in additional capacity. So, for example, with the suspension of the CFO, we did not have a chartered accountant in the organization, and we've contracted in chartered accountant capacity to put this in place and to put in place the various systems that I was referring to earlier. So I think that it's not all fixed yet. So we don't have a perfect procurement system yet. We don't have our contracts sorted out yet in terms of the contracts that are continuing after they've expired. But there's a very active process of putting all of that in place. So I'll start with that, and then I'll move to the team, and then I'll make some concluding remarks. Should we maybe go to the finance first, and then the HR matters? So Ben, do you want to add?
I think the chairperson of the board covered the debt situation quite in a detailed manner. However, I do want to perhaps elaborate more on the action plan that management have put in place to make sure that the irregular expenditure does not reoccur in future. As Chair, you rightly pointed out, there is a lack of a system to identify when contracts expire. And there is also a lack of adherence to the procurement approval process. To this end, Chair, we have looked at the delegation of authority document, and we have reviewed, and we are in the process of amending the existing policy, and this will be finalized by our internal governance structures. I think the delegation of authority was 7 years old, and it had not been addressed significantly to look at the loopholes. In terms of the expired contracts, the implementation of the system automation is underway to warn staff of impending contract dates, the end dates of impending contracts that come to an end. The issue around additional staff is being addressed. We want to expedite the tender process in terms of contract renewals and regularize the existing contracts. We are also looking at the review of our processes and our policy, and we brought in external resources to assist the internal staff members, and we're addressing that, and they actually started this week. In terms of training, there was a significant a need to train our existing staff resources in the use of systems, as well as the relevant legislation governing irregular expenditure. And in terms of the conclusion of the condemnation process around historical irregular expenditure, this is being currently dealt with through our governance structures. So it's a 7-point plan that we are in the process of implementing, and obviously the lack of a system is the root cause at this point in time of the irregular expenditure, and that is what we are dealing with head on at this point in time.
No, thanks. Can we be short, because we are running late now? We must be done by 1:12. It's 5:25 now.
Thank you, Tinchay. Another member, with regards to the morality of the staff, unfortunately, the morale is as a result of the financial constraints and our inability to reward the staff appropriately. So historically, over the years, it resulted in inequities. which then in 2014-15 there was an agreement reached between the organization and labor to implement what we call reward and remuneration projects. So the phase one and two were implemented, but there were delays in implementing that. That then resulted in the increase in the staff in the expenditure, and it moved from 2.5 billion in 2015 to 3.2 billion in 2016, which was budgeted for, which amounted to about 600 million. Of the only amount that was not budgeted for was the dating check that we had to pay in terms of that agreement. In terms of the contracts that have expired, they are mainly relating to the students who come in to do the workplace integrated learnerships with us from the Universities of Technology, and also the registrars that we are appointed on contracts. So we have since reviewed our policy, so that the employment contracts now are no longer, we don't employ them on contracts, we employ them under learnership, and we don't consider them as employees anymore. And on the registrar contract, we've also reviewed that. We now regarding them as employees versus a contract. And upon completion, they would then be absorbed in the organization in the vacancies. So they did not leave the organization. They are still within the organization as permanent employees.
So just on the with other staff matters, the board is not satisfied with the lack of performance reviews and accreditation of laboratories. You know, the fact that you suspended a CEO on the 22nd of February does not explain why performance reviews throughout the organization were not done during the whole year. You can't blame the last 5 weeks with a CEO suspended for those things not happening. So we've asked our incoming acting CEO to make sure that the performance reviews and the accreditation is sorted out. In general, we are satisfied that we have sufficient staff in the organization and in our laboratories to deliver our services well. There will need to be improvements in efficiency and performance. There's some duplication between nearby laboratories that could be merged, certain services in order to improve efficiencies and get more productivity and better value from our staff. But we have committed staff, and we do not see ourselves in a serious staff over understaffing situation. But we think we can do some re-engineering in order to improve our efficiencies and productivity. Do you want to add anything more on the suspension of the CEO? The secretary has been very deeply involved in briefing our attorneys and other matters. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add.
Thanks, Jefferson. It's not, we're not to be too long with the matters. The suspensions remain in effect. As the SCCMA has ruled on our favor, we have expressed our concern regarding the delays of the disciplinary processes to commence. And we have also emphasized with the chairperson of the hearing that the disciplinary processes should commence as soon as possible, and that the process happen at the behest of the employer and will not be able to negotiate further on the date or the availability. Then with regard to the properties, the process is ongoing. We have identified a lot of properties and have done our research, and also the discovery of documents and negotiations with the Department of Public Works on some of the properties that we have confirmed that they should be on our books. And it's just that the process of registration is taking a bit long, but it's receiving attention. We are in negotiation with the relevant department.
And then the grants. Thank you. Acting Chairperson, the issue of the grants is an important one to register, but I think is one of the lesser matters. The NHS has more than 500 million rand of grants under management, and therefore this 12.2 million represents about 2% of the grants money. Obviously one wants to spend the money, but what happens with grants management is that you get awarded a grant and you get 12 months worth of money, but you may well have to employ staff and buy equipment, and that may well take some time to get in place. On the upside, in addition to that, grants almost invariably, if you do not finish spending your money by the end of the financial year, you apply for an extension within which you can spend that money in the next year. So in the books it would look like it is unspent, but that money would normally roll over to the next financial year and you would have what's called a no-cost extension, so that money is spent on the projects.
It brings to an end. I think we've answered all the questions, other than what the department may want to comment on.
No, it's fine. Well, the department is still going to come. They will have their 10 when they deal with that program that manages the entities. We'll take some of the discussion further. But I'm sure that from November onwards, you'll be able to pay salaries. Because you have not made that assurance, as we're told. There's a possibility that after November you might not be able to pay salaries. Can you make an assurance to us that now the matter is resolved?
Yeah, so what I can say is that I don't sign payments by provincial health departments to the NHLS. So we've met with the National Health Council. The Minister has briefed the National Health Council. The MECs have committed to paying in full the current bills of the NHLS. It's been discussed at the National Health Council Technical Committee. So provinces have committed to paying the NHLS. And if the provinces pay the NHLS, we will be able to pay our staff. If we continue to not get paid the current, if this year's bills are not paid in full, we will not be able to be financially viable. So the answer is that as a board, we are obliged to report to the line minister and the Minister of Finance in terms of the Public Finance Management Act if there's any risk that the NHLS to the organization. We shouldn't wait till the risk has happened. And over and above the meetings and the briefings that we've had, the board is at the moment in the process of writing to the Ministers of Health and Finance to say the NHLS is a going concern. It is able to meet all its obligations if provinces pay in full this year for the services they procure. However, current payments are behind, as you pointed out, and if provinces do not make up the payments to pay in full, and we recognize that there are patterns towards the end of the financial year where payments drop off, and the NHLS would not be a going concern. So we are in the process. We're about to submit that letter to say that the NHLS is a going concern, but if provinces do not pay in full, there's a risk that the NHLS will not be a going concern. That's our obligation in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, not to wait until after it's happened, but to alert them. So that's the next step in escalating the matter. So my answer to you is, if Gauteng, for example, in its adjustment budget or in what funds are released from the Gauteng Health Department through the Treasury, makes up the shortfall in payment over these 6 months and pays us in full for the remainder, and other provinces continue their payments towards full payment, the NHLS is a going concern and we will meet all our obligations to our staff and our debtor, our creditors, without reducing the total amount, the current amount we are owing. We will continue to pay the current consumption. Without that, we are at serious risk and we may not be a going concern.
No, thanks very much. We'll let appeal to yourself to come back to us, possible in writing. What is it that you think needs to be done so that we are able then to, as part of intervention that is needed, so that we are able then to make sure that it gets being part of our recommendation for consideration by Treasury.
We will do that in writing.
Yes.
Okay, but what I can say to you now is the essence of that letter is very clear. What we would like the support from you is we are not asking you to ask Treasury to bail us out. We don't need a bailout. What we are asking is for Treasury to impress upon their financial counterparts at the provincial level and the health departments to pay in full bills that are undisputed. So the amounts owing are not in dispute. We have a minor engagement with the Free State, but they are paying in full in the meanwhile. We need them to, we simply want the National Treasury to intervene to ensure that provinces pay for the services that they have asked for and which we have billed for and which bills are not in dispute. That is the essence of it. If that is in place, the NHLS will meet its obligations and will be continue to be a going concern.
Okay. Now that's fine. That's what we want you to tell us so that we're able and the amount involved at the end of the day, so that at least we understand what amount are we talking about. Because knowing provinces, from December they stopped paying services, most of the services in November. From December they ran out of cash until the new financial year. So if you are unable to recoup what they owe now, it will be a miracle for you to receive payment around December, January. That's our biggest concern, our biggest worry. And that's what we say we need to get special attention and be attended to.
I just wanted to say that I think the Treasury has impressed on the provincial treasuries about the payment. So I think it's not about Treasury impressing upon them. It's about the Treasury taking relevant action so that the NHLS is funded. Because just asking provincial treasuries to pay has not worked.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Because it's not that they don't want to pay. It's because the money is not there in provinces. That's the reality of the situation. It's not that they don't want to pay. Is that they don't have the budget at the end of the day. So National Treasurer must take full responsibility on the matter and make sure that matter is addressed. Otherwise, it will keep just being a vicious cycle at the end of the day. Can we agree that we stop there? And then agree that maybe going forward we'll have to, on a quarterly basis, call NHLS and not just meet them annually, because that's another problem. It means we're not playing our role from an oversight perspective. We wait until the end of the year, then they come and then they t-
tell us the stories, we are gone, we come back again, so maybe what we need to do is to create a system where on a quarterly basis, we are able to interact with Janaka and try to understand things as they developed from time to time, so that we are able to work together at the end of the day. Thanks very much. We'll allow NHLS to leave, and then I'm not sure if food is ready, we'll already take food. If it's not ready, then we'll then proceed. And then we take the next presentation, which is from the Office of the Standard Compliance, Health Compliance. You are released. Thanks very much. Travel safely back to Gauteng.
Yeah, now it's our 10th.